Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home with a $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. It is SEC Media Days, 102.5 The Game's SEC Media Days coverage brought to you by Brewhouse South. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. We will have more on the SEC college football front coming up here in just a few minutes. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. We will have Paul Feinbaum for you at 8:30. Had him on earlier in the show. If you missed that, we'll have that for you again coming up at 8:30 here on the program.
No THC included.
No additional supplements in there.
I think I'm gonna do for a rant, just do like a Paul, like do that scenario. We're sitting in the dorm room together.
That would be good.
Let me know on the text line if that sounds good to you. Some good content.
Al says, Edith Bunker's gout in sciatica must be acting up today. Voice is a little higher than usual. Great show, Jim.
And especially my husband, Archie Bunker.
Oh, God. That's when you really hit that Feinbaum, or not Feinbaum, the Kaharsky impersonations, when you get to the Edith Bunker level. That's the highest level of Kaharsky impersonation.
I'm just thinking about it right now with, you know, if Arch Manning's really good this year, the potential of Edith Bunker and the Archie there could be used pretty well, too, on this program. Could be good.
Yeah, that is.
Arch! Arch! Caleb is very upset on the text line as it relates to the Tennessee Titans. The roster is bleep. Yet there are people on this station that come up with reasons as to why you shouldn't bring in Juwan Jennings. It blows my mind. They act like we're above bringing in somebody who's productive.
Who?
I don't know.
Name names. Caleb, you're so mad. Who said it?
I don't know. He's gone on a long little diatribe here about Juwan Jennings.
But he's being all careful about some people on your station who will remain nameless. Who? I mean, you called out Stilley earlier. I didn't. You did.
It's true.
I didn't bring him up. But
rare occasion.
I mean, look, seriously, though, the Jennings thing is I'm not against it. I don't know that I would be excited. You're looking at Dennis's text. I don't know that I'd be excited about giving him 12 a year or 15. You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, yes, would he help? Absolutely. So, I mean, I would be on the phone, sure.
Yeah, I mean, first off, he's got to get traded first, right?
Well, right, you got to be on the phone with the Niners.
Yeah, you should be on the phone with the Niners.
And see if you can work something out. I mean, I'm not opposed to, like, kicking the tires on it.
No.
But I want to know, Caleb, who's over here anchoring you so much? Paul Feinbaum. Feinbaum spends all this time talking to a reporter and a nice story, and then all everybody wants to talk about is the fact that he smoked herb in college.
another outstanding job done by Joe Rexro to highlight it all.
You guys want to order pizza? Maybe you want to order another pizza? I'm still kind of hungry. Stop it.
Austin on the text line says, I think the Titans are going to surprise everyone this year. I expect the unexpected. Austin taking a optimistic view of the Tennessee Titans this year.
I think Austin has done that before. But that's good because we got to have sunshine blowers. You know, the world needs sunshine blowers too. Not just everybody. I mean, it's mostly a pretty negative thing. I mean, Adam in Portland says this is the Bishop Sankey Titans. Let that sink in. Mm. Mark Mariani Titans, Jake Locker Titans. The only difference is we have Cam. And if he isn't special, it's going to be terrible. But can I read this? This is like old from him. From Adam in Portland. This is pretty good. He says, other sports fans say, hey, how did the Titans look this year? Me. Our local sports radio station debated whether Vanderbilt quarterback was the biggest star in the city. Does that answer
it? Yeah, there you go.
And the thing is, I think Diego Pavia might be the biggest national sports star in Nashville right now. Is that crazy? It's football.
I mean, Cam Ward is number one overall pick.
Yeah, Cam Ward was the number one pick.
And he was
a Heisman contender most of last year with Miami.
I know most Titans fans think that like the general public just totally ignores Cam Ward, but I would probably go Cam Ward over Diego Pavia.
I mean, obviously it would have been Derrick Henry before. You could say it's like Jeff Simmons too.
Sure.
I will say though, Pavia, like he does, like people know that dude.
People know Pavia.
Like, I mean, the win over Alabama and all that stuff. Like, he is a cult hero.
That's
in
personality of him. Yeah. Yes. No, I agree.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's up there right now in terms of Nashville sports stars, which I think number one says a lot of good things about him. Number two kind of shows you the level of play right now between the professional sports teams here in Nashville. I mean,
it's a bit of a comment on that.
There's no doubt. By the way, Caleb naming names on the YouTube chat. Willie, TD, and Adam apparently want no part of Juwan Jennings.
Wow. Okay, so the three of them agreed. Interesting. Adam says Juwan Jennings would be everybody's favorite Titan. Amy's too dumb to realize this and go get him. That's what happens when your leadership is from Texas and not Tennessee. I agree that Juwan Jennings would absolutely, like, the fans would love him. So, and there is something to that, right? You don't discount that.
Yeah.
More important to me is what's your production and what are we paying you?
Yeah.
They do have a void. So, again, I'm all for checking it out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Caleb says we're so against paying people, yet we're sitting here talking about how the roster sucks. It's moronic. Yeah, I mean, I understand that point. You also don't hand people money just for handing them money. Like, you have to pay them what you think they're going to provide for your team. Because if you end up just paying whatever to everybody, that's how you end up totally screwed at the end of the day.
Right. Like if Juwan Jennings they can get something, again, reasonable. So what was he's due to make nine something this year?
7.5.
Okay. What would he – if you put him, just plug him in to this offense, what does he do?
I don't know. Because, I mean, the other thing you got to keep in mind is Kyle Shanahan is the coach out there. And that's Kyle Shanahan's system. And look, I think sometimes the love for Kyle Shanahan goes a little bit overboard for somebody who's never won the Super Bowl. It gets a little bit much sometimes. But there's no doubt that Kyle Shanahan's a pretty darn good coach. And I have no idea what Brian Callahan is. So with this system, this roster, who knows about this quarterback? Does Juwan Jennings come here? And is he a 70-catch guy like he was last year? Or is he like a 45-catch guy for 400 yards? Because that's when you get into trouble paying people. If you're paying somebody to be something and they're not that in this system.
Right. But again, I don't disagree in general. Like, yeah, I mean, if there's some expenditure that
sure.
can upgrade, do it. You know? And again, so he's got some years left. So yeah. it's not like it's Hopkins where it's like this team is really good and we need to, you know, have a year or two with someone. Like, no, this is a guy who could play for a few years.
Wouldn't you feel better with him starting the opposite side of Ridley than a rookie?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So have some of that, Adam, Willie, and TD. I didn't hear what they actually said.
I'll take Caleb.
I can't believe that all three of them just completely crapped on the idea.
I don't think they completely crapped on it. But I think they were a little bit skeptical about whether or not Jennings could replicate his numbers here, you know, and what that means for his value.
It is fair. It's always so hard. I mean, it's even hard with the Bengals, you know, with Higgins and stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's just hard sometimes. And sometimes you do see when you get away from someone who changed, like, again, Corey Davis, right? There's an example of a guy who goes to the Jets and it's like, oh, okay, nothing special.
Yeah. I mean, Caleb says
had a good year here.
Caleb says we don't seem to have a problem spending money on old wide receivers past their prime. Yeah, let's stop doing that. That's not good. let's just stop.
In this case, it's not just the money.
Right.
You're going to have to trade a pick.
Exactly.
What is that pick, given where the Titans are? You know,
again,
I don't know.
I'm not totally opposed to the idea. I mean, you're just going to have to tell me what exactly does that look like.
Yeah, if anybody says, hell no, don't pick up the phone if they call, don't call them, no, then I disagree. Absolutely, check it out. If they're serious,
right.
it gets to that point where it actually is them moving him, and I have no idea.
I think you always have to take like trade stuff this time of year.
It's just a bunch of threats.
It's a bunch of threats, and then by the time camp actually comes around and they're out there, that's when most of these situations get resolved one way or the other. So I wouldn't.
I think San Francisco needs him.
They do,
given their depth chart right now.
Yeah, I mean they've.
You know, they traded Debo. And then Ayuk got
coming back
hurt
from an ACL. Yeah.
And I mean, so you got Ricky Pearsall and Juwan Jennings.
Well, by the way, Juwan Jennings knows that, which is why you're saying some of the things that he's saying of, I need to get paid. Like, I know you guys need me, so let's do it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Again, I'm not opposed to the idea. I just, because he was successful somewhere else, I look at this system. It doesn't mean that it necessarily he's going to be the same guy here. Doesn't mean he won't be, but you have to keep in mind, Kyle Shanahan's pretty darn good at his job. Like, he's a pretty darn good offensive play caller, pretty darn good offensive schemer, game plan. And I know that they didn't have the season they were looking for last year. They got ravaged by injury, and we'll see what they are this year. But until proven otherwise, it's difficult for me to put Kyle Shanahan and Brian Callahan in the same category. I'm sorry.
Shanahan? Yeah.
You nailed it.
Thank you. Which Brian Callahan are you talking about now, by the way?
Kalashan?
Ooh. If they could join forces. If they could join forces, they could be Kalashan. Well, this segment was going really well for a while.
By the way, I'm referring to the American football Brian Callahan.
That's the thing. We have to if we're gonna have a Brian Callahan segment from now on, we have to specify.
I know.
Which football?
615-737-1025. More of your Titans thoughts to get to, plus a thought on the SEC and what their scheduling could look like moving forward and whether or not it's going to be a problem. We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Adam Vingan has been drugged into the YouTube chat. Says,
oh, yeah?
Leave him out. And Caleb's trying to nail him down. Were you or were you not against the Juwan Jennings move, Adam Vingan? We need to know. Vingan just said, I don't know what his value is. So. We'll see.
Guys, everybody chill out. Got a little Bob Marley on. Come on. Learn from the Pauls, okay?
You'll hear from another Paul.
This is going to endure.
I smoke weed constantly.
I sound like the dude from Family Guy.
That was actually Kuharsky.
Yeah.
Oh, that was Kuharsky making fun of him?
Yeah. Making
so
fun
we have
of you.
Three different drops of that.
That's right.
That is correct.
That was Kuharsky making fun of your impersonation of Kuharsky.
There's just layers to this show.
It's limitless.
Man. Bro.
It really is.
Like, bro.
What is
I'm
time?
I'm trying to wrap my brain. Exactly. By the way, great Grateful Dead intro. Speaking of, like, since it's Stoner Day on the Robbie and Rex show program, that was a great pull from you earlier.
Oh,
that was
no
what was it?
Shakedown Street.
Shakedown Street. Great jam for the Grateful Dead.
Ian, oh, no problem.
I didn't play any fish today, but
that would also be good. I celebrate their entire collection. So you get that joke now.
I do.
I celebrate their entire collection.
We'll get Paul Feinbaum coming up at 8:30 here on the program if you missed that conversation. 615-737-1025 is our phone number.
It's a sober, sane conversation.
It is. It does not sound like the SEC is moving to 9 games anytime soon, Joe. So as we evaluate that, you know, the Big Ten has been adamant about how their 9-game schedule, they've got 9 games. That makes them tougher, and they need the SEC to get to 9 games to evaluate all these things evenly and all that stuff. And why would they play, you know, higher profile non-conference games while the SEC is at 8 conference games and they're at 9? So all these things are up for discussion here. It does not sound like the SEC is moving to 9 anytime soon, but we'll see what the future of that looks like. What do you make of where that currently sits, and how should this be evaluated moving forward? Because if you ask the SEC and Greg Sankey, and he said this yesterday, go look at that 8-game schedule for most teams. There's not a whole lot of people around the country that would be willing to trade their schedule for an SEC team. So where do you come down on all this? What do you make of that argument and where this is headed?
I somewhat agree with them. First of all, and they're in total spin mode. You know, everybody else wasn't following Sankey on the, hey, everybody give the NIL Go app a chance. You know, the coach was like, yeah, this is garbage. But they're all on board with the our 8-game schedule is better than your 9-game schedule.
Right.
Again, I think in a lot of cases that's true. I don't know that across the board it's true. If you're a Big Ten team that plays 9 games and you happen to get, okay, so this year the best teams, you know, obviously Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, you know, Michigan would probably be the 4th best team. But let's say you had those 4 teams on your schedule, and then you compared that, and then, you know, there's other games that aren't necessarily like a gimme, like a Wisconsin or an Iowa. You know, they have a lot of good teams. And then you compare that to an 8-game SEC schedule where, you know, that given year you get like Mississippi State and whatever. Yeah, it's possible that it's not true, but I think by and large it would be true. But so Pat Forty wrote a good column about scheduling and about the situation, and I think he's dead on in terms of you should look at this like 8 or 9. Let's look at it like 10 power conference games on your schedule, okay? So if you're only going to play 8, so first of all, the SEC does have a requirement of everybody playing another power. You know, they only play 8 games, so they better have that requirement. Yeah. As Greg Sankey noted yesterday, some don't. The Big Ten doesn't. The Big Ten does play 9. But what I think 10 games is, that's of your 12 games, you should play 10 games against power conference teams. Now, that there's still a big variance in there too, right? Like you can play – I mean, look, Texas is going to Ohio State. That's legit. You know, there's some really good games. I mean, LSU is going to Clemson, legit. Like, but then there's other power league teams that are, you know, they're not all created equal. But it's interesting with these two leagues. The SEC comes out of the gate really strong. So 16 of 18, this is from Forty's column, 16 of 18 Big Ten teams are opening at home. And the exceptions are Nebraska's playing Cincinnati and Kansas City, which is basically a home neutral game, Northwestern at Tulane. SEC, there's huge games on the road. I just said Texas. I mean, Alabama's going to Florida State. That's a legit scheduling, right? But what the SEC does then, of course, they always have their vacation weekend before rivalry weekend, which I hate. And so the benchmark of 10 games, okay, and then this is the Power League opponents in Notre Dame. Only 3 SEC teams are playing 10 power conference teams, 3 of the 16. The ACC has 12. The Big Ten has 12. The Big 12 has 14. So, I mean, to me, look, they're clearly not going to 9 right now, right? I mean, the way they're spinning it, it's hard to believe that all of a sudden they're going to be like, yeah, let's go to 9. So then I think you better make sure people are playing. Like, I don't think it's okay to play, you know, 3 absolute patsies in another power conference team. Now, look, there are also exceptions. The Big Ten, Indiana, they just canceled, like, the Virginia series and they're for an FCS. Like, they are like, well, we got in the playoff last year. Worked out for us pretty well with no non-league schedule at all. And that is where the committee moving forward, it does need to be addressed and judged more harshly if you don't schedule anybody.
No, I agree. I think you can view it both sides. And again, some of this is why it's got to be, you know, the idea of going back to just the BCS. I understand how some people want that. We're not going back there, so it's a waste of time to talk about. But this is why the committee has got to get a better hold on what matters to them and what doesn't. Because we've talked about this on the show. It kind of feels like the requirements shift from week to week on these stupid little 6-week-long ranking shows that they do. And then, you know, something that matters and their explanation 1 week, the next week something comes out that's in direct, you know, opposition to that, and it's irritating to watch. But it is, like, especially now with how big specifically the SEC and the Big Ten are, you're going to have imbalanced schedules. You're going to have some teams that even within their conference in the Big Ten get the softer side of it, or in the SEC's case, get the softer side of it. Like, look, last year a lot of people had a problem with, like, if Georgia would have lost – in the SEC title game. That would have been their third loss. But it kind of felt like they were getting in regardless. And I saw a lot of people that were like, why? They would have 3 losses. And then you go back and you look at their schedule, and it's like, well, they played Texas, and they played Tennessee, and they played Ole Miss, and they played Alabama. Yeah. And they played all these guys that are really, really good programs. Like, I think you've got to look at it individually when it comes to these schedules here. And I don't know that they do a good enough job of that right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you also have to be able to look at it and, okay, so that team, maybe going in the year we thought that team on their schedule was this, but exactly, they become this. Oh, and beyond that, oh, by the way, that team that week was missing their middle linebacker. And I mean, look, they have more than enough time together. And I think they talk about these things. I mean, it's just like the NCAA basketball committee, like I've said, like I've done the mock thing there, and it's like you talk about every possible thing you can think of about a team and about their schedule and about this game and that game. I mean, but you still have to, like, ultimately, okay, we're making a choice, and then you've got to have whoever your you know, your committee chair go on TV and take about 90 seconds to explain it, you know? So that's where people are. Like, it's always going to tick people off. But I do definitely agree. Like, Georgia last year, and yeah, you could make the case. It was not crazy to make the case for Bama and South Carolina and Ole Miss last year over Indiana. It was not. And it shouldn't just be across the board. 11-1, 9-3, that's just too different. I think they got it right with that. Some people don't. It's very close. So moving forward, if we were in the same situation, I mean, the problem is, like, Bama looks so bad, right? Like the game at Oklahoma, for example.
Yeah.
So it's like, and then Ole Miss was so bad against Florida. And it's like they all, I thought South Carolina was, that would have been my choice of those three based on the body of work. But, I mean, look, we're going to be, I think, stuck with the committee doing this stuff. I think it's fun. We like to argue. And so it's a great vehicle for that.
It is.
So that's if you're signing up for the 5-11, that's what you're going to get. But I do think that, you know, the SEC, if they're not going to go to 9, they better make sure that, like, they actually are challenging themselves a little bit more then.
And then it'd be nice for the Big Ten teams, cough, cough, Nebraska, to hold on to those games too and not just cancel. That'd be good too.
Yeah. No, for sure. Absolutely. If the Big Ten can't just lean on, well, we play 9, so I'm just going to play. But again, that's what Indiana's doing. I don't know that we're going to see Indiana in the playoff again anytime soon. It was a great story.
May not. 615-737-1025. Our phone number. We'll hear from Paul Feinbaum coming up next. If you missed that, we'll have that for you coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. We caught up with the great Paul Feinbaum earlier in the show and got into Rex Road's new piece on him in The Athletic and, of course, some college football as well. Here was that conversation earlier in the show with Paul Feinbaum. Paul, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good morning, guys. How are you?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Paul, we were just going over the Tennessee quarterback situation. Obviously, Nico Iamaliava, the story of the offseason. He has moved on, and Tennessee fans rallied behind Josh Heupel at that point. One of my thoughts at the time was, it's great that you're rallying behind the coach. Are you still going to be rallying around the coach when you're going 7-5 or 8-4 this year? And we'll see what happens on that front. But what do you make of kind of the situation Tennessee's in at quarterback and where you think this may be headed?
Well, number one, Josh Heupel got a lot of credit for something he really had very little to do with. I mean, the guy walked out. So let's be real. You know, he didn't kick him out. He didn't show up for practice, and the school did the only thing they could. And I understand why everybody praised Heupel, because I was part of that group, but you're completely correct. If Tennessee's slumping toward a 7-5 season, nobody's going to remember that and nobody's going to care. But I really don't think that's going to happen. I frankly think Tennessee has an upgrade in Joey Aguilar. I don't think he's got the raw ability that Nico did, but I think he wants to be there, and I think he will be a better whole package at quarterback. And I never understood all the fascination with Nico other than the money. I mean, that, you know, from day one, that's all we heard about, how much money he was making. But outside of a couple of plays, what did he do at Tennessee?
Wow. I did not realize you were such a Nico hater, Paul. But you are an arch lover, I understand. And I've got to get to that. So I want to make sure I have it right. So you think he's going to be the best college quarterback since Tim Tebow?
See, Joe, you don't know me. You haven't spent much time around me. But,
that's a fair point.
but, you know, let me make a few things pretty obvious to the audience. It's July. You're on television. You get asked questions. And one thing I've never liked is boring. So I gave a heater-type answer. And now I'm stuck with it. Even my own colleagues are blasting me on national TV. But that's okay. In full context, I probably should have said, I think he will be the sum of the whole part better than the best quarterback since Tebow. No, of course he isn't right now. We haven't seen much of him, and that's understandable. But I think he's got the potential to be. Sometimes if you knew anything about me, Joe, you would know that I leave out words sometimes in going down the hyperbole trail.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. We haven't spent much time together. Well, listen, I mean, Paul, so I do have a story on your day. We've talked about it earlier. I don't know if you'd be able to read it or not yet. I haven't been served any papers yet, so that's a positive. I did. I feel like during the process, you know, we got to be pretty close friends. And so one of my favorite things, Paul, of the whole thing was reading your book that you did with Gene Wojciechowski, which was, remind me of the title.
My conference can be your conference. Why the SEC? Let me try this. Get this out with a straight face. Still rules college football.
That's right. So I had three takes from that book that especially stood out to me, and I wanted to run them by you. I wanted you to rank them for me, okay?
Go.
All right. One, Florida already has its next Nick Saban. His name is Will Muschamp. Okay. Two, Texas A&M is going to take over the SEC as long as they can keep Kevin Sumlin. And three, Tennessee finally has a football coach with a plan. His name is Butch Jones.
Well, you missed one that was written after the book came out, and that's the day Jim McElwain was hired. I said, Florida now has its Urban Meyer. You know, I subscribe to the theory of never be boring, never be gray. And part of that is when you mentioned it in the article, Joe, when you go to work for, you know, what you wrote or described as state-run media, you try to keep your job to the next contract, and you can never go wrong being highly positive. But and as you also know, that's not how my career started. So I think early on at the SEC, I tended to go a little bit hyperbolic. Those are some idiotic takes. I'm just glad you never dug deep enough to find out how lavishly I praised Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee.
Yeah, I missed that one. Well, but the thing is, Paul, in this book, there's a lot about Jadeveon Clowney and the criticism that you sent his way, and Ray Tanner, you know, being mad. So, I mean, there's plenty of pissing people off through all this, too, of course.
No, I was on TV my first couple of weeks at ESPN, and Clowney had like refused to go to practice one day, and Spurrier called me and just ripped Clowney. He said he's the worst player he's ever had. Blah blah blah. Like, so I go on TV and call him the biggest loser in college football, and then Spurrier comes out and blasts me. I'm like going, is this real? But it's also you guys cover pro football. You know how that works. Listen, the one thing I've learned, and that you can never go broke being wrong about something. What I despise, and this is what I really try to build my career on, and I know you guys subscribe to it as well because you're working at one of the top sports radio stations in the country, is nobody wants to hear a guest say, you know what, that's a good question. I mean, it's really it could be a close game, and it could go either way. I think it's a fourth quarter game. I mean, that drives fans crazy. So go ahead and just say he's going to be the best since Nick Saban or better than Nick Saban or all that, and everybody can make fun of you, and 20 minutes later somebody else will be making a fool out of themselves.
Paul Finebaum with us here on the program. Paul, what do you make of Kalen DeBoer heading into year two here at Alabama and the way the stage is set for him with, I presume, Ty Simpson at quarterback?
That is correct, and I think the expectations are literally through the roof. This is Alabama that, I don't know. I think there's what's the saying? Elephants have no memory, or maybe that's another animal. I don't know, but Alabama fans never remember what happened previously. They've forgotten the end of the season, losing to a Michigan team that I'm not even sure had a starter from the previous year's national championship team playing in the bowl game. He's recruited incredibly well. The real question is, how will he perform when the pressure is on? Last year, three times as a double-digit favorite, including in Nashville, he lost. If that happens again, the drumbeat for him will be enormous. But as we speak, which is in the middle of July, I think they have a really good team.
Well, speaking of the coach of Alabama football, Paul, what happened yesterday with Greg McElroy? I'm a little confused because when I first saw his report, I was like, well, if Greg McElroy is saying someone really knows that, then boy, I'm taking this seriously. And then apparently it's not to be taken seriously. Is that right?
Well, I'll sound like somebody my age. I mean, this modern media is ridiculous. I mean, this is, you know, what happened was, and in a nutshell, I was on Greg's show. I'm on there every Monday. And he said to me, hey, I heard from somebody that really is notable that would know, and he believes Nick Saban is coming back into coaching. What do you think? I said, that's absurd. I said, there's no way, blah, blah, blah. McElroy then agreed with me. But he did ask the question, okay? And he was, and I finally asked him, I said, 30 years ago, my editor would have called me and said, who's your source? So I'm asking you, who's your source? He goes, well, somebody that knows Nick Saban. So it was you know, call it whatever you want. I knew the second he said it, it was going to get traction. And it did. And do I think there's any truth to it? No, but that has nothing to do with the reality of the world we live in when it comes to aggregating stories.
So he is he basically walked it back, and he was on your show later, right?
Yeah, I mean, we were together on the SEC Network set, and he was acting like, I don't know why everybody's reacting this way. I mean, 2 years ago, Joe, in Nashville, I show up, I go on First Take. The first question to me is, considering that Nick Saban did not make the playoffs last year, do you think he'll be on the hot seat? It was not Stephen A. Smith. He was on vacation. And instead of saying that's the stupidest question I've ever had, I said, if he doesn't get to the playoffs, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Nick Saban. And then I continued to say, and he's the one that's going to be putting the pressure, because after all, he's the great. All the headline was, Feinbaum says Saban on hot seat if he doesn't make CFP.
Beautiful. And I'm sure Nick was fine with that.
Yeah,
I'm sure
he was none too happy, I can assure you.
All right, so Paul, just to close this out, first of all, I do want to seriously thank you for all the time, and I mean ridiculous amounts of time you spent with me. And my God, the texts, so many texts. I'm so sorry, Paul, but I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun to do. Do you agree with my overall takeaway that you've become a big softy?
Yes, but that's nice. But that comes with age, and that comes with the reality of a dramatic shift. And I think you pointed it out very, very eloquently that COVID changed me. It doesn't mean I'm not coming in with hot takes, but I'm not coming in with the kind of eviscerating knife that I used to have, because people listen to this show because they love sports. They're not as fascinated by people being torn down. All you have to do is put on CNN for that.
No doubt about it. Paul, thanks so much for your time. You've been very kind to be with us this morning, and we will talk to you soon.
It was my pleasure, and thanks, Joe. And the server should be there in a few minutes with the lawsuit.
That sounds good.
That was Paul Feinbaum on with us earlier in the program. We'll react to what he had to say, and we'll get into the quarterback situation at Tennessee coming up next. An interesting take from Feinbaum on where they're at right now. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Appreciate Paul Feinbaum for being with us earlier in the program. Joe, he had an interesting take on the Tennessee quarterback situation right now. We talked about Merklinger and Joey Aguilar earlier in the program and who's going to start. What level of quarterback play are they going to get this year? And if you ask Feinbaum, he says that he thinks that they've upgraded at quarterback and did not understand much of the hype around Nico other than the money, and thinks Tennessee may be better off at quarterback this year. Your thoughts on that thought by Feinbaum?
You know, Feinbaum usually is right, as we found out last segment. He rarely has bad takes.
Yep.
I got to say, he might have been a little bit too much of a Nico hater. And maybe Tennessee fans have sort of, and Paul Feinbaum, by the way, is a University of Tennessee graduate.
He is.
So maybe he's like some of all Twitter, sort of choosing to not remember any of the good things Nico did. His numbers were not great. Second half at Alabama, anybody?
It's pretty good.
Anybody remember that? I don't think he had like two completions last year, and that was all he did. There were other times. A little bit risky with the ball in the middle of the field. He missed some throws, but I thought he was tough. I thought he was a terrific runner at times. And, I mean, at the end of last year, we were like, okay, well, if Nico takes that step to great, then next year could be special. It could be, you know, they could make up for some of the other things they lost. And now all of a sudden we're just this trash and Nico? I mean, Paul can do whatever he wants, but I'm just saying, I don't agree with that. And it's hard for me to get to Joey Aguilar being an upgrade. That's why I picked Jake Merklinger to start over him. I don't think that's the case.
Well, as I told you, if you're going purely off of the stats, then what Nico did last year is not some insurmountable thing for either one of these quarterbacks. I mean, he threw for 2,600 yards, 19 touchdowns, 5 picks. He was fine last year. But we talked about even when he was on the roster that if this particular Tennessee team with a lot of questions at wide receiver and offensive line, if they're going to be a playoff contender again, it's probably going to require Nico to be really, really good. Like to take that step from being pretty decent last year to being what they recruited him to be. And now obviously he's gone. And I still have the same questions about the roster are there. What sort of quarterback play are they going to have to get to be an actual playoff threat this year? I mean, is the defense going to be as good as it was last year? Maybe. It'll be good. I think a lot of it depends on Jermaine McCoy. How healthy is he? If he's healthy, then I think he's got a chance. Like, look, they were really deep at defensive line last year.
Really
their sack
deep.
Totals were very underwhelming based on the depth that they had. Like, they did not bring the quarterback to the ground with anywhere near enough regularity last year. They were like eighth in the SEC, which with that front is unacceptable with how good that front was. So, look, maybe they're better at getting the quarterback to the ground this year. I don't know. But I still think you're with the overall totality of the roster this year and how young they are on offense, it's not just going to require Nico quarterback play from last year. It's going to require a lot more, and I just don't know that they're positioned to do that.
Yeah, it's a fair point on the sack totals, but like you don't just have James Pierce every year. You don't just have Omar Norman Lott what he was last year every year. Right? So I think there's probably a little bit of a step back there overall with the defense. So yeah, the quarterback play has got to be pretty freaking good, and you know it's and the receiver play has to be way beyond what it looks like on paper. Like Mike Matthews, I don't see any way around Mike Matthews having to be great, pretty close to great, when you look at the composition of the offense for them to really entertain playoff hopes.
And you're talking about a guy that caught 7 passes last year. 7 passes, 90 yards, 2 touchdowns.
And look, I know that everybody can't be, you know, Ryan Williams and Jeremiah Smith, but I do think he's got a lot of ability, and there is something to Heupel not loving playing freshmen. I mean, you know, they had a lot of other guys last year, and, you know, some of them were hurt, like Thornton's hurt. And so I think this year with the clarity of, like, this has to be, like, the best playmaker on the offense, I have to feel like they're going to pour everything into him, and you're going to see that talent. I do think he has a lot of it.
Yeah, I do too. Like, I think he's got a chance to be pretty good. And now I'm wondering what the quarterback play around him is going to look like. You know, I said earlier, I think the best case scenario for Tennessee is probably they get through camp and they just feel like Jake Merklinger is ready to go and he's their guy. You know, we'll see. Like, Joey Aguilar's got some playing experience to him. He turns the ball over a lot. With this offense, does that naturally come down? Or the turnovers a big problem? Like, that's the one thing you really can't do in this offense. Like, you start turning the ball over, I mean, you don't really give yourself a chance at that point. So I'm interested to see, as somebody who has thrown 24 interceptions the last 2 years, is that just what he is? Or is that a product of the circumstances around him in App State? How much better could that get here at Tennessee?
Yeah, and it's also like what kind of picks. I mean, the one thing with Nico, he only threw 5, so, yep. I mean, that's pretty good. But there were some risks over the middle. Joe Milton, I think they were afraid of throwing over the middle of the field with him. He didn't throw a lot of picks either. You know, like what kind of pick? Like Hendon Hooker, one of his, what do you have? What do you have in 22?
Yeah, like 5 picks total.
Yeah, with 30, whatever. One of them was just, you know, it was a choice route, fade, I think, to Hyatt that Keely Ringo just played perfectly and picked off the end zone. You can live with those, you know, taking a deep shot.
Hendon Hooker had 5 interceptions total in 2 years at Tennessee.
In the 2 years. Yeah. There you go. So, yeah, so I don't know the nature of his turnovers. He's had – it's an alarming number. I do think this offense naturally takes away some risk from a quarterback with the way you spread the field out and the way you kind of give clarity on what the coverage is. So, you know, and how good of a runner is he? I mean, I think that's a big – I think the quarterback run element of this, and maybe that tilts it in his favor because I think he's a pretty good runner. I think that's going to have to – what do? We have another picture of
looking,
the Pauls hitting a bomb?
No, I'm just looking at the stats. Like, Hooker threw 58 touchdowns and 5 picks in Tennessee.
It's just absurd.
Like, it's an unreal. And, you know, you asked the question at the time, and I still wonder the answer. When are they going to get anything close to that at quarterback again? And I know they got a bunch of high-level recruits coming in, and you know, Nico was a high recruit, and they got, depending on where you look, the number one recruit in America coming in next year at quarterback. But, I mean, that's a high bar to replicate right there.
Titans and Vols fans continue to wait for, and that could be a long wait, the Hendon Hooker level of play.
Yeah.
And the Titans for the Ryan Tannehill at his peak level of play. When are they going to get that?
It's a good question. I mean, you're hoping now.
Yeah, you hope soon. You hope soon with Cam Ward, but it's a higher bar than some people want to remember, just like some people want to think that Nico had 2 completions last year. But I still love you, Paul Feinbaum.
That does it for us on the program today. We'll be back.
Smoke them if you got them.
6 a.m. tomorrow. DVD's coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.